we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a story from The Sun, read by Caroline Nichols.
A jogger killed a puma with his bare hands this week after the animal bit him in the Rockies.
Our thanks to Paul Merritt of Dorset for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Desiree Birch and Helen Lewis. And opposite them, on my left, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Susan Kalman. Desiree, whose union is in a right old state?
Oh, I mean, presumably mine. It's always mine. Like, every single week, it's mine. It is the State of the Union in the United States. Apparently, this past Tuesday, Donald Trump staged a new episode of The Handmaid's Tale because there were so many women there protesting being forced to give birth in a dystopian American landscape that we all now live in. It was amazing because he was being mocked by Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker behind him, who was giving him aggressive claps. After all the points that he made, which was especially irritating because he's usually the one giving an aggressive clap to a woman.
Allegedly. I don't know if I can say that. Can I say that? I'm going to say that.
The main protest is about his ban on abortions, right? Or essentially, the conservatives want to put a ban on late-term abortions, which I think Trump is entirely behind because I'm thinking he's probably afraid his mother's going to come back from the dead to institute, like, a 72-year after pill or something like that.
The theatre of it is incredible. I mean, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi's sarcastic clapping, and I just think that she had the face of it when she held her hands out in front of her, and it was so obviously like, baby done potty.
I feel slightly sorry for Donald Trump in a way. Because I don't think he expected to be president. I think he kind of thought someone would stop him before now. It's like when I found my cat rolling around the litter tray. I watched her do it, and she watched me while I was watching her, and I think she was waiting for me to stop her, and it was quite sweet, and until it kind of dawned on her what was happening, and she just kind of sat there looking quite embarrassed. But, I mean, my cat isn't in charge of a nuclear arsenal, so... Yeah. And, you know, Putin didn't help her into the litter tray, but... The extraordinary thing was seeing Pelosi. I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, it's everywhere, YouTube. It is a masterclass in sarcastic clapping. And her eyes are the eyes of a shark. And she is just going, I am going to get you. The really good thing about it is I think it's 3 or 4 female candidates have already come forward for the presidency next time. And it's exceptional to watch. What they've done is they've got angry, but they're doing something about it. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, but he did take credit for it. He's like, there's more women than there's ever been. And the women are like, yeah, we are here to stop you. That is yeah. It's like a drink driver bragging how nice flowers look when they're tied around a lamppost.
Movement, because things have changed. Like, if you see women now, especially even in comedy in our industry, where we used to be patronised quite a lot, and we go, oh, I really need the work. Now when you see women, when someone goes, okay, so the man will go on last, and you women, you just do a wee bit at the start, and you just fold your arms and you go, do you think so? And it was like, they all just kind of stood there and went, oh, do you think so? It's quite exciting.
It was great. And, like, so they all wore white in solidarity with the suffragettes, yes. Which is so cool. And I know it didn't faze Donald Trump because he's used to talking to people in white. They normally have hoods on, though. So all the women wore white to show solidarity for the suffragettes, and all the men wore shirts ironed by their wives to show that there's still a long way to go.
I find much, because there was that thing, a lot of people saying, oh, you know, his tie was all sort of askew. And I sort of think, maybe his tie is the only bit of him that is sort of right, and the rest of his entire body, his entire feet. Because whenever he's talking, I mean, I don't really listen, because, you know, why would you? But whenever I see him talk, I instantly just think about his colon. Because he just looks like a man who is struggling all the time. all the time. He just, that is just, his symptoms are writ large on his face.
No, it's a, apropos of nothing, but my boiler broke for 2 weeks recently. There is a point to this. And it was so cold in the house, and I was frightened to go to the toilet. It was so cold. And my body became frightened and refused to expel anything from my body. And after about 7 days, what? You're right, I kind of had the same look Donald Trump has.
The thing is, Susan, you were basically at that point hibernating like a bear. Like, so you know the fact that the greatest thing about bears hibernating is that they make a plug and put it up their bum so ants don't crawl in while they're asleep. That, you were one day away from that. So...
This sounds like an excuse a bear has had to make up in a hurry. This is the news that this week Donald Trump gave the State of the Union address, because nothing says celebrating American greatness like being lectured on democracy by a Francis Bacon painting of a slightly angry and yet also slightly horny ham hock. Many social media users pointed out that Nancy Pelosi was clapping sarcastically, and I, for one, welcome this new wave of political protest through the art of passive aggression. Truly, you've never known terror until a middle-aged woman says to you very quietly, "Oh, you've decided to do it like that, have you?" Yeah. 2 points to Desiree. Helen, who said tusk, tusk to Brexiteers?
This must be Donald Tusk, who is the Polish politician who is president of the European Council, who basically, the Europeans are now reconciled to the fact that we are going to leave the European Union and have basically decided to have a little bit of fun. So what he did was, he did the most magnificent troll, which was he said, there's a special place in hell reserved for Brexiters who went into this without a plan. And can you spot the trap that he's laid there? Peter Bone, one of the backbenchers, then went on Channel 4 News to go, never in my life have I been so offended. And you're like, the bias essentially gone, I would like to kill all idiots. And people have gone, how could you say that about me? Here's the other thing he did was that, so Jeremy Corbyn came out this week and said, I've got 5 tests that I need to be passed if we're going to, Labour's going to back a Brexit deal. And Donald Tusk went, well, these sound very good, Theresa. Why not agree to these? In a kind of... I mean, he's going to get a false moustache and a pipe. That is where we're going with this.
I like it. I like that it's like a rap battle now, that it's like proper beef. I think it's cool. There's a bit of smack talk going on. And also, it really got... Farage got annoyed. He said that Donald Tusk was an arrogant bully. Yeah, which is the pot calling the kettle black, and then because the kettle's black, saying that he shouldn't be able to live here. And then Jacob Rees-Mogg came out and said this really weird thing. I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong because I don't know what language he speaks. But he tweeted and he said, is it Aquinas?
Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas.
Aquinas, of course. Sorry, yeah. Got him confused with the other philosopher. He said he's hardly in the Aquinas class of a theologian. And I hate having to Google stuff to know if I'm being slammed or not. Like, it's so...
Before I get offended, I just need to check. Does hell have a free trade agreement with the EU? These things are... And the funny thing is, Theresa May said that the comments that Tusk had made had caused widespread dismay. I don't think that's what happened. Everyone went, yep. My excitement is, what is a special place in hell? Because hell is meant to be bad. But a special place indicates it might be better. So what is a special place in hell for Brexiteers with no plan? Is it them listening to Jeremy Hardy on repeat? I like to think it is.
This week, Donald Tusk caused anger by asserting there was a special place in hell reserved for MPs who supported Brexit without a plan. Jean-Claude Juncker tried to laugh off the comments later, saying the only hell he knew was doing his job as president of the European Commission, before stuffing his pockets with free croissant, then heading off in a subsidised limo to eat a slap-up lunch of steak à la Schadenfreude. Tusk is wrong as well. Rees-Mogg does have a plan. 1, call for Brexit. 2, put all money into offshore accounts. 3, get Nanny to drive the getaway car. 4, hang out with Lord Lucan and Shergar in a Swiss chalet until this all blows over. 2 points to Helen. Kiri, who thinks the PC's PCs aren't very PC?
This is the police are using algorithms to predict where crime's going to happen, basically. So they're like, oh, according to our results, more crimes are going to happen in this area. But it's flawed because it uses the data that they have, which is often really biased. So, like, areas with more Black and Asian communities, they tend to stop and search and they tend to arrest more people. So it just means that it's going to kind of perpetuate unhealthy stereotypes potentially. And I don't trust artificial intelligence at all, because artificial intelligence is the stuff that when they're online shop, when they're like, oh, sorry, we don't have any tampons, here's a bag of Haribos. Like, they make ridiculous decisions. And, like, the AI on my Instagram account as well, because I follow exclusively drag queens and Judy Garland fan pages, is now trying to push to me male gay dating sites. And I've had a look, and there's some wonderful chaps on there, so I'm willing to do everything it takes to settle down with you and your French bulldog.
Do you think this is a sensible idea, Susan?
No, I mean, I think I completely agree with Kiri. Algorithms don't work. There were some youths in my local park the other day. And
do you mean there were some children on the swings?
Did you shop them, Susan? Did you have them rounded up?
Okay, genuinely, right, I don't like people who litter. I will chase after the car and shout, this is your litter, and throw it at them. And if there are youths, I will get in my car and I'll drive slowly down the street. I mean, I'm not saying I filmed them.
No, you're really going to have to...
It sounds as if your response to littering is to curb crawl. I'm not sure.
I keep a notebook of number plates that park in the street for a period of time.
Oh, wow, you're like the sort of misfit character that turns out to be hold the vital evidence in a sort of murder programme.
I do my ironing in the bedroom upstairs, which has a great... It's got a big bay window, and I just look out the window and I look at everything that's happening, and if I see someone new in the street, I'll make a note. And if I... What? And if I see someone going up to the neighbour's house, I'll take a pic.
I think we'll all agree not to mention this again.
Yeah. I just like to know my area is secure. Like, I've already worked out if there was a problem in the area where I could build a hide in the garden with a motion capture camera to see what was happening.
It's only sensible.
Yeah.
You've broken about 8 laws in this whole story.
No, I haven't. Yeah. No, I haven't. No, I haven't. I tell you why. I tell you why. Because they're parked on a public street. I'm not publishing the photographs of the number plate. I'm keeping it in a private notebook for my own attention so I can see if there's a pattern. I am not putting the film of the children on Facebook. I'm just keeping it in a folder marked suspicious children.
Suspicious children.
Something happens, and the police come round and say, "Did you see anything, Miss Calman?" I'll go, "Yes, I did." Just what I'm doing is helping the police. I'm like a neighbour. I'm a one-woman neighbourhood watch.
You're a vigilante. That's what you are. You're a danger.
No, because I've never threatened anyone.
Well, you've just followed them in a car slowly. Oh, look, there's a car which doesn't appear to have anyone driving it behind it. Coming after us really slowly. Well, that certainly makes me relax. Yeah. I find the thing with the algorithms that we know that thing if you buy something and then the next week you see lots of adverts for it, so you buy a sofa or whatever it is, and then the next week there's loads of sofas or whatever. So you think, well, I'm not going to do that. And the way you need to flip it to make it work, I'd have thought if you've done an armed robbery last week, the next week you probably think, God, that was a bit sort of nerve-wracking, wasn't it? I'm not going to do one this week. Right, so, but the people most likely to do an armed robbery that week is just anyone that's never done an armed robbery before, so they should all be arrested.
I have a similar experience, which is booking.com. So I use it a lot to book places for work. So you book, like, a single bedroom in Norwich, and it will send you an email afterwards saying, Helen...
What kind of work is it you do, Helen?
They send me an email a week after that says, Helen, do you want to turn your trip to Norwich into an adventure? No, not overly. But yeah, they do that a lot, don't they? You buy one dehumidifier on Amazon and it thinks it's the start of a lively career collecting dehumidifiers.
Yeah, so her damp's probably got worse by now, surely.
Well, I mean, the this is all very funny, but like there really are lives at stake here because basically we're going to be outsourcing all of our racial profiling to machines, which is going to put a lot of hardworking Britons out of work, first of all. But I feel like the people who are going to be programming this and teaching this are all of the sort of cops in America who get assigned to desk duty after they've shot a kid in the back, right? So like they're not the people to be telling the machines what to be looking out for. I mean, seriously, like Liam Neeson's probably going to be looking for work, you know, soon. And even though he has a thirst for justice, I do not want him on my back. All right.
This is the story that human rights organization Liberty have expressed concerns over police forces using computer algorithms to predict crime. There are concerns that such algorithms could unfairly target ethnic minority communities as crime hotspots, although this would, of course, be offset by data from the county of Midsummer, from which we can extrapolate that one in three rural white Britons is a homicidal vicar. 2 points to Kyrian. And at the end of round one, these scores are Helen and Desiree have 4, but Kyrian and Susan have 6. We start round two with an unfortunate juxtaposition of headline banners in The Times.
Married women and affairs. Will it really wreck a relationship? Why older waiters and barmen are the best.
Our thanks to Alexandra Lewis for sending us that. Desiree, who should be screening their children's habits?
Parents should be screening their children's habits in terms of limiting their screen time. Another study came out this week that's basically urging parents to kind of have the talk with their kids a little bit younger, but the talk is kind of about their phones. Because if you think about it, like a phone is very much like a penis, like it is an appendage that you pay a lot of attention to. And it's a useful tool, but in the wrong or idle hands can be very dangerous, right?
I've realised that the weirdest thing that I voluntarily do to myself, I don't know if you do this, is when you're lying in bed at night, you start reading your phone with one eye. Does anyone else do this? And then you get up to go for your inevitable nighttime wee, and you realise that one eye has got brilliant night vision and the other's got none at all. It's genuinely the most sinister thing you can voluntarily do to yourself in bed. I challenge you.
Yes. My one eye has the poor night vision because I keep dropping the phone on the same eye over and over again as I'm looking at it.
I always use my phone at the dinner table. You can fit more on it than a regular spoon. The thing is, after, I mean, a 15-year relationship, sometimes you need to look at your phone. I mean, the reality of relationships, you love them, you want to be with them, you're not going to split up with them, but, God, they're boring sometimes, you know? So, how was your day? And you're like, God, oh, I could be peeling Candy Crush.
I think it's good at the dinner table. I would rather look at my phone than anything that my dad cooks. I've seen him boil mozzarella. I don't even know the mechanics of that.
I think there's a little bit of that nostalgia thing, though, about all this. You talk to your children at the dinner table because we didn't have phones. And the point was we were told to be quiet at the dinner table and eat our dinner and then go upstairs, you did your homework, you went to bed. You didn't talk. No one ever talked. It's done me no harm. I'm absolutely fine. Oh.
you're absolutely an example to us all, Susan.
Agree with Susan on that. Like, I mean, before there were phones, we were all eating our dinner around televisions, and I'm guessing before that, everyone was eating it around a radio, and before that, everyone was staring at an etching or something. People, if you don't want to talk to your family, you don't want to talk to your family. Like, that's it.
This is the news that the chief medical officer has warned parents not to let their children take screens into their bedroom or use them at dinner. Doctors say parents shouldn't let children use screens at dinner. Dinner time isn't for mindless internet surfing, it's for engaging children in intellectual discussions about whether or not you're going to eat your sodding peas, you little git! The only device you should take to bed is your radio. Snuggle down and hold it tight like a chunky plastic teddy bear and let the soothing sounds of today in Parliament lull you to dreamland. Night-night, little ones. Night-night. 2 points to Desiree. Kiri, what's selling by the pound?
So, Poundland are selling engagement rings. Oh. One guy's like, oh, thank God. It's called a bling ring, which feels like they pick the title and then work backwards. So they launched it, and in a week, 20,000 were sold. I know. But I can totally see why this has taken off as a model. So basically, I was single for a bit and I started talking about it on stage. And a weird thing is people thought I was soliciting on a grand scale. So what I did is I bought an engagement ring that I used to wear on stage. And then what would happen is guys would come over after gig and they'd start cracking on and then they'd see an engagement ring and they'd try harder. Yeah, it's quite the investment. Apparently, West Yorkshire is where most of them are sold. I'll let you make your own, Joe. And the tagline to it is, because we promise they'll want to choose their own. So that's the idea. I think it's quite a sweet idea that you buy this engagement ring to go, listen, I want to marry you. I just can't afford to get you the ring that you deserve yet. So this will sort of do for now. It's a placeholder ring for your placeholder fiancé. But I think if you can't read through my search history or browse through my engagement ring Pinterest page, then you don't deserve my virginity.
I actually think Poundland are onto something here because I think it's quite sweet. I want to marry you, but I want to make sure that the ring you have for the rest of your life-ish is is the one you want. We can sneer at things sometimes, but I actually think it's quite a sweet thing. And the next time I get married, I will be doing this.
Because what is the implication of that? It's like, you know, because we promise they'll want to choose their own because you have terrible taste in jewelry and people, obviously. Yes. I like that they call it a placeholder ring because obviously once you've put it on her finger, you'll be able to find the right one for the real ring because it's going to have that huge green band around it that's itching and just making your skin peel back all week long. But I kind of like it because I feel like I would actually make use of that because when I lived in New York, I had a great scam going with my gay best friend where he would just decide to propose to me in Burger King and we got so many free fries.
I think a Poundland engagement, I think it's sweet and fun. Like, mm-hmm. I want to go to a Poundland wedding. In fact, I've definitely been to a Poundland wedding. Yeah, it's in a flat roof rugby club and they're a right laugh. I'd much rather go to a Poundland wedding than a posh one, sat on some hay bales, surrounded by jam jars and freelancers. It's...
This is the story that Poundland have sold over 20,000 of their £1 engagement rings. The best thing about a £1 plastic ring is it barely hurts when she throws it back in your face. The retailer said it sold 20,000 in the space of 7 days, so either a PR masterstroke or panic Brits doing what they can to secure themselves a last-minute EU passport. 2 points to Kiri. Susan, whose decimal system is about to become a lot more Jewy?
So I've been given this question, and big picture, it's about saucy books, like erotic books. And I've been given it, and I don't know why I've been given it, because I'm the most repressed human being that has ever lived when it comes to me. And if I was to write an erotic book, it'd be called You Can Keep Your Brogues On. So I'm going to keep this very brief because I really don't like talking about this. The British Library has a collection of historical saucy books and stuff, and they're digitising it. So there's someone called Roger. wrote a description of the female body as a land needing to be ploughed. My body needs a fly mow, I'll be honest.
Helen, are you excited by this cache of pornography becoming available to a wider public?
I kind of am, actually, because I've been writing this book this year, and one of the things I've been writing about is the history of sex research. And is there ever any group of academics who have more fun than sex researchers? It just seems to have been the real kind of banter PhD. And I found that one of the guys that was in charge for a time of this collection was a guy called Eric Dingwall, who was known to his friends as Dirty Ding. And I just think how... I just imagine a moustache, I'm thinking pince-nez, Dirty Ding. Shows you into his, like, cupboard full of... What was it, like, 40 copies of Fanny Hill that they had? Incredible.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Or Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure. That sort of thing. Personal favourite, absolutely. Absolute stonker. Real page-turner.
They said a lot of these saucy books, it's written by men for men. like loads of erotica. But there is a like genre of female erotica, and that's where you just it's basically a couple and they sit down and they sort of go through tile samples. So good.
There's no need for it. There's no need for it. If I want to be sexy for my loved one, I will take my duffel coat off.
That's ruined Paddington for all of us.
This is the news that I have just applied for a British Library card. Not for what you think. I'm researching a very serious novel about bums. Maddie Smith, the library's curator of printed collections, said of the online publication, "It's the final push," before throwing her head back in wild abandon and collapsing sweatily into Sir Reginald's muscular embrace. 2 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Desiree.
Yes, a listener, Jeff Dobson, sent in a photo of a nearby electrical box with a safety warning on it, and the safety warning reads, "Opening this box will result in death by electrocution and a 50-euro fine."
Susan.
This has been sent in by Simon Morgan, who saw this on Freecycle and thought of us. It's an electric drill, Black & Decker. The description is, "Drill with carry case and a front grip. It has been in storage, but I've tested it this morning on my neighbour and it works fine."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Desiree and Helen have 9, but this week's winners are Kiri and Susan with 11. Before we leave you, here is a Valentine's offer from Marks & Spencer, sent to us by Robert Emery Jones.
Are you ready for our love sausage? Heart-shaped. Heart-shaped, lightly truffled, wrapped in bacon, and in our stores tomorrow. Say it with sausages. Tag someone you'd like to share a love sausage with this Valentine's Day.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Helen Lewis, Desiree Birch, Gary Pritchard, McLean and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and Sarah Morgan, with additional material by Kat Sadler and Eleanor Morton. The producer was Victoria Lloyd, and it was a BBC Studios production.